Welcome back to an episode of our month-long Women in STEM series in honor of Women's History Month. I'm Belen Cacho, an ant geneticist and science communicator. Along with this interview series, for the entire month of March, we are raising money for Girls Who Code. Together, we can help close the gender gap in technology fields. Today's episode discusses lupus at great length. Neither host nor guest are medical professionals, and none of the following should be considered medical advice. A link to the Lupus Foundation of America will be in the show notes. Our guest today is Coco Confession, a full-time variety streamer on Twitch who holds her Bachelor of Science in Chemistry. Coco talks about her love for organic chemistry, her difficulties as a woman in a lab setting, her time as a leader of the Twitch Women's Guild, the importance of DEI, her journey to a lupus diagnosis, and her current lupus advocacy. Coco, would you mind a brief intro?
Sure. I have been a Twitch content creator for almost 8 years now, and just a super variety streamer. I love games. I play music. I craft. I also love challenge running, so I'm a speedrunner as well. And I do challenge runs in indie games and Souls games. And I originally was going to get into a science field. I got my degree in chemistry, and I wanted to get into forensic science, specifically working for a crime lab. And unfortunately, life had other plans and ended up working in retail management for about 11, almost 12 years. And then slowly, I say slowly, it wasn't slowly. It was actually a very quick transition into content creation. I was doing it as a hobby, and then I had an opportunity to just kind of jump all in, and I did. And I was I've worked very hard, but there was a little bit of luck involved. I think I was just like, this was the right place, the right time, and I took a huge risk, and it paid off. Science thought process is like weigh the risks and analyze, and you know, afterwards, like, you reevaluate, see if this is going to work for you. And it ended up working out for me. So that's kind of how I got here, I guess.
Which I'm so glad that it worked out, because you are so, so good at it, too. Like, it's like one of those you see someone and they're just meant to be in that position. And I love watching your streams. I love being part of the community and seeing all the things that you're able to achieve. It's been such a joy. And y'all, unofficial, I'm pushing for Coco for ambassador. I told her in person, I'm like, this needs to happen. This 100% needs to happen.
I would love to be. I did put in an application, so.
Okay. I have disclaimer, no weight in this, but if I did, I'd be pulling along, be like, please give her the fancy check.
The support is great. It would be awesome. I was the leader of the Twitch Women's Guild. I helped build the program, built the foundation of the program. And it was one of those things that it was an experience that really opened up my eyes, because you go through life and you are like, I want to do this. You know, this is what I have my mind on. This is what I want to do. And then your experiences kind of shift that path. And I always thought I was going to be a doctor or a pharmacist, or then it was like, okay, I want to work for a crime lab. And I look back on when I was much younger and my plan for myself, and I'm like, how did I end up here? You know, but the Women's Guild experience was so life-changing in a lot of ways. But one of the things that I realized about myself was I love doing DEI work. I love advocating for marginalized people in places that are very male dominated. And, you know, in the gaming and tech industries, it is very male dominated. And my experience on Twitch, while it's been absolutely wonderful, I have had a lot of challenges being a woman on the platform or being a woman on social media. Like, you can imagine what X is like for a woman who speaks up for herself, you know? So I did find this passion to advocate for creators on Twitch. And in this case, it was women, but that's why, you know, I had applied for ambassador years ago and I never reapplied because I wanted to be able to bring something to the table. And now I feel like I have that perspective, that mindset on how to really make Twitch a better place and how to advocate for those things, especially for people who don't have the resources or the voice or the opportunities and the equity to be able to do so.
So let's turn back a little bit earlier on in Coco's life, because I feel like a lot of the experiences that you must have had along your journey got you to this position to be able to be an incredible advocate for women and also for like lupus advocacy, like so many things that have framed who you are. You've talked about like, you know, chemistry and the crime labs, which I wonder if, and you'll let us know, I'm sure, if there's a connection to the Crimers and the original crime lab, but what got you into the sciences to begin with? Like, why was it chemistry and what was it that was attractive to you about that?
Yeah, I've always had a knack for math specifically when I was in elementary school, middle school, math and science, but I didn't have a focus on science until I hit high school. And I had the absolute best chemistry teacher. I will never forget her. She changed my life. She had a passion for chemistry that I had never seen in any of my teachers before. For science, I guess, in general, not necessarily chemistry. But she made it so fun and so interesting and really did relate the concepts of chemistry to real life. And I think that's really important for kids, young kids, is to like apply these really abstract concepts, theories, and how they're gonna like how they incorporate into our daily life. And she did that. And I was like, this is what I want to do. This is awesome. I really enjoyed being in her class. Like, I still remember the chemistry songs that she sang. You know, this isn't high school. This was a long time ago. And I still remember those. And I actually incorporated those songs in my essays for college, and it got me into the college of my dreams. And I just like, I owe everything to her. But anyway, that's how I got into chemistry. And I was like, this is what I want to study. I love it. I love being in lab. I loved doing labs. And because I loved it so much, I was good at it. And she was very much focused on a lot of organic chemistry, which is where I really thrived in college. Organic chemistry was where I really found my passion.
So that's really cool that like it seems that's a common theme in a lot of people who either get into the sciences or never go near it again, is that story of the one particular teacher. And so it's really cool that there was that one that you had that influenced in the positive direction. It's also cool that there were chemistry songs.
Yes, there were chemistry songs. I can share one. You want me to share one?
If you wouldn't mind, yeah.
Okay, so they're really small and short, but they're really funny and they're catchy. And it was ways to remember like formulas and stuff. So like one of them was, a mole is a unit, haven't you heard? It's 6 × 10². And so like no one forgot what a mole was for the rest of the year. And I still remember it today.
And it's such a good tune too. That is a really like,
yeah.
I can see it being a really good earworm.
Yeah, and she was, it was so funny because you see these stereotypes of like mad scientists, and she was that in like the best way. She was wild and unhinged and doing these out of this, these world experiments on her desk. But, and everybody was like, oh my God, is she going to burn down the school? What's going to happen? But it just made it so interesting. So, like she loved her job. She loved teaching. She loved impacting young, impressionable minds. And I thought that maybe that's what I was going to do too. I was like, okay, well, I could be like, the sciences opens up so many avenues, right? You could be a doctor, you could be a pharmacist, you can work in a lab, you can do research. And I was like, maybe I want to teach chemistry. Like, I would love to be able to do what she did for me, right? Well, that ended up not happening. Now I play video games for a living, but but yeah, it's, you know, educators are so important, and what's happening in our world and especially in the United States right now is really disheartening and sad, because our education system is crumbling, and you know, you have kids that just don't have, they're not given that opportunity to be passionate about something, you know. And I think in a lot of situations, even when I was in school, there were a lot of situations where I wasn't my education experience wasn't fostered in a way that encouraged me to dive into what I loved and what I was passionate about. Like I had to separate out my time amongst all of these studies, which were important, but man, imagine if students were able to like really be passionate about something and that environment was fostered to for their success in that area. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one thing though that it really comes across from your teacher is that she inspired you.
Yes.
Right. And I feel like we'll get into this more throughout our talk, but I think that's one thing that you still do to this day to many other people. So in a way, you still become that teacher. Yes, through there's chemistry too, but through being a content creator and being an inspiration to many others, you know, you're still kind of in like taking that spirit of what your teacher brought. And it's really cool that you're like taking it to the next level. And like you said, it is really important, especially now, to be an advocate for, like, you know, you can dream and you can dream big and you can pursue your passions.
Yeah. I actually didn't even think about that. I do a lot of education now that I'm thinking about it. And I do a lot of mentorship, especially in, you know, not only with Women's Guild, but like even outside of the Women's Guild, like taking on, you know, people who are newer to streaming and have questions or, you know, I think it's really important to understand business fundamentals outside of streaming. Like my experience in business management after school was extremely important to my success as a content creator. And so like I teach people what I learned when I was in business management and I didn't even think about it. I'm like, it's like an aha moment right now. Like, yeah, I guess I am educating people. Yeah. I may not be in chemistry, but in other things, I guess.
And that chemistry background, no one can take away either. So it's like, if ever that crimer comes up to you and is like, I'm really interested in forensics, you could be like, well, you know what? I got that too. So it was interesting that you noted that it was organic chemistry, that when you went into college, that's what attracted you, because that's usually like the break point where, you know, students go in for medical school, they hit orgo and they're like, oh, no, thank you. What about orgo did you find really attractive? Like you're in the chemistry field now, you're really enjoying it, but that organic chemistry and a love for it is not something typical.
Yeah, I think I really enjoyed the lab work that came along with organic chemistry. By the way, what I found really wild about my college experience is like all of my labs were, our grades were based on making drugs and how pure they were, which I found hilarious. And like, I don't know, when I tell people that, they're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you're doing that. I'm like, it makes sense if you're, you know. But anyway, but that's what I did. And I loved it. I loved the process of understanding a theory and then putting it into practice in a lab and doing all the tests to determine whether or not that experiment was successful. Like that process was so interesting for me. And then, of course, like you run a reaction and then you take your product and you run all these tests on it, right? To see how impure or pure it was, or, you know, did you get the right reaction? And you have all these, you know, like I love IR spectroscopy. Like that was one of my favorite things to do, because it was like a puzzle, right? You like have to look at your absorptions and whether or not like you had the right, right combination of compounds. Like it was just like a really cool thing. Can you tell I like puzzles? I like puzzle games. Like that's one of my favorite things. So it makes sense that labs were fun for me.
Was that love of puzzles early on? Like as a kid, did you also love puzzles and it just translated to organic chemistry as well?
Yes, I think so. Because science is one big puzzle, right?
Yeah.
You have a theory, you test it, you know, you analyze your experiments. Like it is one big puzzle. And I did like that aspect of it. So when it came to organic chemistry, I think like the lab work is really what, I mean, I liked it in high school when I was studying it in high school at a much more amateur level. But when I got into college and I was able to like really implement those things in the lab, that was huge for me. And I really liked it.
That is almost like a dividing thing as well between a lot of students going into labs, is just like having the mindset of,
how to dissect a problem. Did you find that you had any difficulty with going in and like creating this puzzle set, or were you, does it come really naturally to you?
It was pretty natural. The stuff that I did in labs, I think the hardest part was creating a space for myself as a woman in labs. Like, that's what I had the hardest time with. It wasn't necessarily like the material or the work, but it was like being one of the only women in my lab, or like finding a place for myself where I found that I was, that I belonged there, I guess. The material itself was sometimes intimidating, especially when you're like jumping in, especially when you're like a freshman and you're new and you're green and you are trying to meet new people. And on top of it, getting into, you know, a field that's really demanding and in depth. And then on top of it, you're like one of the only women in your class. It was like a whirlwind of, oh my God, do I belong here? You know, but, you know, after I really started to solidify my place and like, I deserve to be here because I know what I'm doing, I did find a lot of success in my labs. Like those were my best classes. And being able to, really like create those relationships with, you know, the professors and the TAs and like them, me being able to kind of create just a name for myself in that way as being like the organic chemistry girl. Well, because don't ask me to do physical chemistry or biochem. Those were not my forte for sure.
That actually dovetails into a question from the chat, is what exactly defines organic chemistry and how many different kinds of chemistries are there? And I guess why did you pick orgo?
I found like, so physical chemistry, it's like, so biochemistry is like the biology of chemistry. So you talk a lot about like proteins and like cell reactions. And if you have any biochemists in the chat, please correct me.
No, model building with like proteins. Yeah. Yeah.
So physical chemistry is more of like the physics of chemistry. So you talk more about, oh my God, you know, like trying to think of what would it, like you can think about like radiation and vibrations and more of like the physical aspects of reactions, I guess. Can you tell I'm not good at physical chemistry? I don't even know how to describe it.
The all I know about PChem is I saw a bumper sticker on the back of someone's car that says, honk at me, I passed PChem. And that was my only background in physical chemistry.
It was so beyond my understanding, like just my comprehension of it. The concepts are so abstract. I feel like with organic chemistry, what I loved about it is that, yes, some of the concepts are abstract and you're really talking about something that the eye can't see, but it made sense to me because it was, I mean, you're talking about organic compounds, right? You're talking about carbon, you're talking about things that like make us, right? And I really liked the reaction side of chemistry where you can take one thing, take another thing, you put it together and like it creates this, and how it makes this and like all the exceptions to the rules. I was like, oh, that's interesting. I love that. Like those were the types of things that I really enjoyed. And organic chemistry to me made sense because I felt like it was closer to what I can understand as real life.
Yeah, there's like a real life tangible explanation to it. And like you're moving around electrons and you're changing the shape of things. And it is a puzzle, right? Like you're starting off like, here is this molecule, get to this molecule at the end, and you're the one who has to fill in the recipe to get there.
Yeah. Like I thought like the 3D, I remember like all the little 3D toys that my professors had, and it's like actually showing how electrons move and how things are oriented and like why you would have this orientation and why this couldn't have a double bond. Like those types of things were really cool to me. Just a side note in there too, which I think the reason why I was really good at organic chemistry too, I'm really good at geometry. So being able to visualize the 3D structures of compounds was really helpful for me in O-Chem. I really thrived in geometry. I don't know if I just like am able to visualize what things look like better than people that don't like O-Chem, but that was something that was really helpful for me as well. So
one thing that you were pointing out that when you were in the lab and you were like working on these questions is that initially there was a strong sense of not belonging before you basically, it sounds like you just kind of fought your way and you're like, look, I do belong here. Can you comment a little to those who are watching and maybe listening and wanting to have this, like something positive, inspirational note, like how did you, like, what is your advice for someone who's in that position now? Like you've been through the ringer, unfortunately, where it's not just immediately welcome in, you belong here.
Yeah.
What do you suggest to folks undergoing something similar?
That's a tough thing because I don't think there's a straight answer for it because you got to figure out like how you are going to get comfortable in that type of situation. I think that for me, it was, I think as people, when we're comfortable, we don't grow as people, as scientists, as business owners. And so if you're in a situation like that where you are uncomfortable, maybe you are the only woman or marginalized person in this group, you're the trailblazer. Like you're the person who someone else is going to see doing this. And they're going to say, I see someone who looks like me doing what I want to do. That means I can do it too. And growing up, it was so important for me to see myself in places that I wanted to be. Like that's what made me say I can do this. But sometimes I didn't have that. And that was really, really hard. That's why representation is so important in all industries, in all fields, especially sciences. Because when you, I don't think I had one female professor when I was in college, like for the science. I mean, I took other classes, but.
But in the sciences in particular, yeah.
I don't think I'm like thinking back. I don't think I had one female professor. And that's hard. That's hard as a woman going into the field. You're like, wow, is it that hard to be a woman in this field? So, you know, if you are the only person, just know that it is going to be hard, but you might be the one to inspire someone else to do it, to be in that field. And I talk about this on Twitch all the time. Like, we need to see representation for women on the front page, on stages, at events, at you know, doing showcases, because you know there's a little girl out there that is feeling awkward or feeling out of place because she likes video games and not dolls, and she thinks that there's something wrong with her, and she needs to see that woman on that stage talking about video games so she can say there's nothing wrong with me, you know. And that's why representation, I fight for it all the time because it is so important to see yourself in these positions.
Absolutely. I think that's one of the goals of our Women in STEM Month series of putting together is just to highlight, you know, scientists, content creators who are women, who are in fact like trailblazers like yourself. And you can make a difference by seeing people who are in that position. At least that's right, the hope. I know my daughter's going through it now. She's only two, but can you know how hard it is to find like non-boy specific dinosaur toys?
Yeah.
It's a little thing, but it's really heckin' frustrating where it's like she loves dinos, but everything labels it's only for boys.
That's awful.
Yeah.
Girls are allowed to like dinos. I like dinosaurs. I love people like that's what I mean is it's tough out there for young girls in you know, in boy fields. You know, I love sports. I wanted to play sports. I wanted to do traditional boy things. Like I didn't really get into dolls, or I was in dance when I was younger, and I told my parents, I was like, I don't want to do ballet anymore. I want to play soccer. And they were like, okay, play soccer, you know? But those types of things were a little bit tougher for young girls to get into because they weren't girly, you know?
Yep, absolutely. So. But you're, like you said, the science is unfortunately is very similar, but you end up becoming the trailblazer that ends up pushing through and making it so hopefully the next person in line, it will be a little bit easier.
Yeah, here and there, I did have women in my classes. Don't get me wrong. Like, I wasn't the only one, but it was it was not weighted. It was very leaning to one side. And that's another thing too, is like supporting other women in the space is so important. Sticking together, same thing on Twitch too. It's like sometimes when we get into situations of, maybe in school or even on Twitch where there's this like underlying competition, like there's no such thing. Women need to stick together on Twitch too, support each other. And that's what I love about the Women's Guild too, is it's like all of these women just hyping each other up and being each other's advocates. And it's like a really awesome thing to see women supporting women. So that's another thing too, is like, if you're a marginalized person in a space, like support other marginalized people, like make sure you are uplifting them as well.
So in the chemistry field, like you found like this really strong passion for the organic chemistry, and a lot of it, it's in the lab that was class affiliated, if I'm not mistaken. Did you do any labs that were not affiliated in the classes, and or what was your, how did this frame your next step or your next goal in life?
Gosh, most of my labs were all pretty much associated with a lot of my organic chem classes. I really wanted to work in a crime lab. Like, that was something that I really wanted to do. Unfortunately, about the time, my last couple of years of college, and was where I got diagnosed with lupus. And I ended up having to work full time on top of finishing my upper division lab classes at college. And so because of all of that, I was unable to pursue a forensic career because my job at the time offered me a full-time management position that would have paid for my school loans. So I took that instead and always said I was going to go back to school. And of course, like, once you're out of school, it's so much harder to go back. Like, if I had the time and the funds, would I go back and shoot for a master's or, try to get my PhD? Probably. I would love to. I love learning. I love understanding how our world works through a chemistry lens. I think that's one of the coolest things. And I would love to go back, but life's expensive, especially right now.
Absolutely. And trying to learn at the same time. And afford things, it doesn't really go together, does it?
No. I think my labs in school really helped me understand that I didn't want to be a doctor and I didn't want to be a pharmacist, and that I wanted to apply my education towards what I love doing, which is like solving puzzles and I just thought that like a crime lab or like a forensic chemist position somewhere would have fulfilled that like little spark inside of me of what I really enjoy doing.
It's still really cool that you're still, it hasn't soured you to learning, right? Because it could have. It's like, well, I had this dream to go pursue this particular thing, and it almost is a little bit because of financial constraints, almost taken from you. But loving learning, that's a really, really cool component. You can still have that. Is there a favorite topic that you still love to learn that you might, pull up a paper on and just be like, oh, I wonder what's going on here?
I love learning about like lupus. I did have a moment where I was like, oh man, maybe I should be like a lupus researcher or something. But I do like learning a lot about lupus because it's something that I experience every day. And I think the science behind it is, while sad, it is also fascinating to know because how complex our bodies are and our immune systems are. But I think that first I would need to go back to school and get a refresher because I've been out of college for 15 years. So I would definitely need a refresher in chemistry. But I do like, I do enjoy like organic chem, and just that very specific area of chemistry is just something that I just love to immerse myself in. So if I were to go back, it would probably be something along those lines.
And that's something that I will want to get into about like focusing on like the lupus side of things and like how that's, you know, it's extremely important to you and you do a ton of advocacy for it. Before we dive down that rabbit hole. So you, after college, you went into a full-time position. How did you end up today where you are now as a content creator? Because that seems also like we were talking about at the beginning, it's a pretty big jump, right?
Yeah, so I've loved video games ever since I was a very small child. Before I could even play them, I remember watching my mom play A Link to the Past on the Super Nintendo, and I would sit there and watch her and help her solve the puzzles. I wasn't helpful. I just, you know, I didn't know what I was doing. But it was like that moment where that I will always remember and was really special. And I think is like what triggered me to want to be a gamer was enjoying watching my mom going through and playing these games and solving these puzzles. And then as soon as I was old enough to be able to play them, I started to. And I grew up with, we were a Nintendo family. We played a lot of Nintendo. And now I speed run A Link to the Past, which is like full circle, sort of cool. So, so when I wasn't working, I was playing video games. Like I would hold Guitar Hero tournaments at my college dorm room all the time on the weekends in college. And so when I was working full time in retail, I was running flagship locations in LA for I'm not going to say which brands, but think about like the biggest brands that you would know. Like I probably worked for them, and I still play video games on my days off. And so one day I was like, well, let's just press the go live button and see what happens on Twitch. And I did. And my first game that I ever played was Final Fantasy 14. And I just enjoyed it. I started to get a pretty, you know, fairly small audience. In the beginning, I got affiliated, you know, pretty quickly within the first month. And less than a year later, I went full time because I enjoyed it. And I started to gain an audience and I started to exercise a creative side of me that I don't think I had ever seen. You know, being in the sciences is very left brain and sometimes it stifles your creativity. And then I found something that really, I was not only passionate about, but I love. And I think that being in retail for so long also allowed me to more easily speak to strangers on the internet, which is important. And so, yeah, within the first year, I was able to go full time. I had an opportunity to leave my job because there were things happening there that were extremely unhealthy. My doctor told me I had to switch careers because my job was literally killing me with lupus. And so I was like, okay, this is it. We're going to try it. And we did. And I'm still here today.
Was this pre-COVID?
Yes. So this was, this was the middle of 2018 is when I went full-time.
So that's really incredible to even like, cause like a lot of creators will be like, well, during the COVID peak, right, is when I came in, and that's when people were started coming towards me. But you've been on the platform for a while and really successful even before there was this like COVID artificial bump, right, where it was like, well, this is why I made the jump to it. So that's really, really cool that it was even beforehand and for so long too, like within a year of being able to starting to going full time. Is there a favorite game that you like to play as part of the stream, like a go-to comfort game? Or is it just in general, any kind of variety?
Right now, my go-to comfort game is Darkest Dungeon. I'm doing a challenge run in it right now, so it's like always easy to go back to. It's a really tough challenge run. I've been working on it for over a year now. I'm on attempt number 33 to get to get through the hardest difficulty of the game, Deathless, which is very, very tough. So that, or I would say A Link to the Past speedruns, like those are the two that I'm always going back to. A Link to the Past is a comfort game for me. It's very nostalgic. It's what got me into gaming. I'm always going to go back to it.
And you also go on the world record runs, if I'm not mistaken, too, right?
Correct. So I am, if I haven't moved over the last few weeks, I'm number 60 in the world for 100%. No major glitches. Yeah.
So how does that feel, Coco, going from the kid who played with your mom and, like, you know, pretending to go through and help to now being in the top 100 of a world record for a video game? Like, that must feel incredible.
It's a pretty cool thing. If you would have told, like, if I would have said when I was a kid, like, hey, I am going to be playing video games for a living and I'm going to be top 100 in the world for this game, I would have laughed in your face. Like, you know, it's pretty wild how life works out. And yeah, it's pretty cool. And I actually started speedrunning a different game that I played when I was younger called Bugs Bunny Crazy Castle 2. And for about 3 months, I had the world record in that game. For about 3 months, and then it recently got taken from me, so I'm working towards getting it back.
So second place then?
I'm second place right now.
Okay, yes. So we got to get Coco back up to first place, that's what I'm hearing.
Yes, I have some grinding to do.
Nice.
But
it's just a really, really cool, like, take of what you're able to work on and what you're able to do within the gaming sphere. Months. So what is, I guess, let's delve into, if you're comfortable, Coco, a little bit on the lupus side of things. Like, so we've had some questions just to begin with, like, what exactly is it and what is it? How does it affect a particular individual?
Sure. So lupus is an autoimmune disease. And what that means is that my immune system does not work like it should. It thinks, in very, very simple terms, my immune system thinks I'm sick when I'm not. So it attacks, instead of attacking like viruses, bacteria, it attacks healthy tissues. So your joints, your skin, or your internal organs, it can attack literally anything. And that's why lupus is extremely hard to diagnose. It, on average, it takes about 6 years for someone to get diagnosed with lupus. I've heard someone having to wait over 20 years for an official diagnosis, because there's no straight way to test for it. There is a list of indicators that you have to check off a certain amount for someone to be able to diagnose you with lupus. There is no cure. It is an extremely painful and debilitating disease, depending on the severity of it, and it can vary. I know people who have kidney issues. Their kidneys are failing them. If you know Selena Gomez, she is, I think, a fairly well-known celebrity. She has lupus and had to have a kidney transplant because she lost one of her kidneys from lupus. In my case, my kidneys are fairly healthy, knock on wood. We're trying to keep them that way. But I have lung-involved lupus, so I have inflammation in my lungs. Things like COVID are very dangerous for me. I am very susceptible to respiratory infections, and I often have inflammation in the lining of my lungs, which makes them basically rub up against each other like sandpaper. So breathing is really hard sometimes. Some people have neurological involvement. Some people have heart involvement. A lot of people get rashes on their face. Something called the butterfly rash is very, very common in lupus patients. It is a red rash that goes over your nose and onto your cheeks, and it looks like a butterfly. So it's a really tough disease, not just to diagnose, but also to treat, because the symptoms are so vast, right? So when you're treating lupus, it's usually a very broad, generic attempt to suppress the immune system, to keep the immune system from attacking your healthy tissues. But in doing that, it can be dangerous because then you're more susceptible to infections from viruses, bacteria, whatever. And so it's kind of like this constant balancing act of keeping your immune system at bay while also not getting sick from other things and also managing all the symptoms that come along with it. Because most recently, within the last about 15 years, they just developed, like, the FDA had approved their first drug for lupus, which was Benlysta. I believe that was in 2011. But anything before that was just about managing the symptoms. There was nothing you could do about lupus itself.
So, and because it presents in so many ways, that's also like there's different subsets of it, right? And that's why it also makes it so difficult to diagnose something like this, because it's not just you're presenting with X, Y, and Z, and that's always what it's going to be. There's all this huge range, right?
And what works for one person sometimes doesn't work for another. And that's why there's been a, I know, I'm sure we're going to get into the research, the most recent breakthroughs in research, but there are a lot of people that don't respond to the normal lupus treatments. And so they're having to do more clinical trials on, like, okay, what are the things that we could do for these people that don't respond to any lupus treatments that we have, and their immune systems are running rampant, you know? It is, we call it a mimicking disease, because so many people who end up getting diagnosed with lupus were probably diagnosed with a million things before that. Like, I was diagnosed with Epstein-Barr, chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia. They thought I had mono for a while. They said I had mono. And I was like, I don't think so. I don't think it's mono. But it took me 6 years to get diagnosed, and lupus runs in my family. So imagine, like, hey, I have lupus in my family, but yet I still took 6 years to diagnose is pretty absurd.
So it took 6 years for them to identify that that was what was going on.
I started having symptoms when I was really young, you know, maybe early teens. And I look back and I say, you know, it's probably even more than 6 years, but I think that when I say 6 years, it's like when I started really pursuing a diagnosis, like there's something wrong. I need an answer. But even before that, I was having really strange symptoms, as like pains as a kid. I'm like, why do my knees hurt when I'm 11 years old? Like, why is that happening? Why does my chest hurt when I'm laying down at night, you know, those types of things. So I look back and I'm like, wow, there were symptoms that were popping up even when I was a very young girl.
So that's terrifying. Like, just thinking about how the, because even if there's not initially a diagnosis, just the unknown factor of it, right? And how to manage something like that is very, it seems like it's really scary. And then on top of that, right, you also have COVID hit. And like you mentioned, like, if it's already lung infected is how it manifests within you, that makes it all the scarier of what's going on during COVID. How was it like dealing with that? Like, I mean, we're still not technically, I guess, out of the pandemic, but during the height of it all, when it was so unknown, I imagine that luckily you were in the full-time streaming service, so you're able to stay at home, but it must not, and still not, must be easy.
Yeah, the pandemic was really expensive for me because I ordered in everything. I didn't leave the apartment. I didn't go get groceries at the grocery store because I just couldn't take the chance. And when the vaccine came out, I got it immediately. And then I started having really bad reactions to the vaccine. So now, you know, after getting the first two, and then I got two boosters. And I was having really bad lupus flares after I would get them, and I would be sick for weeks. So my rheumatologist said, don't get them anymore, because triggering lupus flares can be really dangerous. Especially because it can, you know, it can progress the disease. It's just like not good for your body to be under so much stress. And so she said, don't get them anymore, which was real frustrating because I wanted to do whatever I could to protect myself. And now I am one of those people that relied on others to protect me. And that has been really tough because I feel really vulnerable. I wear a mask everywhere I go. Like, I, even if I'm just like walking into the grocery store, I still wear a mask and I do my best to protect myself. I ended up getting COVID once at PAX. I double masked the entire time and I still got sick. I still got it. So because no one there was wearing a mask, and I was, it was probably one of the worst illnesses I've ever had. I was sick for almost 2 months.
Wow. And that's being a double mask. And that's not the only conference that you've gone right on. Like we got to meet at TwitchCon, and even mm-hmm. there having to be masked and prepared and assuming that others are also taking care of themselves and doing the vaccination attempts. Like that must be really, really frustrating then.
Yeah, it is. I mean, people are allowed to decide what's best for themselves. But what is frustrating for me is this anti-science movement right now, where there's so much misinformation being spread about, you know, the medical field and vaccines and like their safety. And it is absurd that we have a measles outbreak right now. What is happening? It was eradicated. Like what is going on? You know? And so that's the most frustrating thing for me, is that people are making decisions based on lies, misinformation, and it really puts people like me at risk. You know, I want to do what I can to protect myself, but there are some situations where I can't. It's more dangerous for me to take, you know, to take a vaccine than it is not to. So that's been really, really tough, like battling the pandemic. And then, you know, every time we have flu season or RSV season, it's really dangerous as well. But I do whatever I can to protect myself. I try to stay out of real crowded areas and I mask everywhere. And I just do what I can. I control what I can control, you know.
It makes it exceptionally difficult too, as if as a content creator, when you go into conferences, right, where it's like to meet people in the community and to further spread like your brand and who you are, it makes it all the harder to be able to do something like that too.
Yeah. It's tough because places like TwitchCon are life-changing for content creators who are trying to do this for a living or trying to take this seriously. And so it's not an option for me not to go. I have to go. And so it's that risk. It is scary. That weekend is always scary, because then I go home and for the next few days, I'm like, oh my gosh, am I going to get sick? Am I getting sick? You know, what do I do? You know, and there's always that anxiety. But.
And then this past TwitchCon, you even played with CA in LA. So you were just like musical badass up on the front stage. So it is, it's not just that you're someone who's going, you're just like straight up featured. And yet but yeah, it kind of speaks to how, you know, important it is to be able to go out and do these kinds of things. And it's just difficult and frustrating too. What can folks do at home in terms of contributing to research? Like, I know you had a big fundraising event that takes place in May. Could you go into a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah. So I back in 2019, right before the pandemic hit, I got in contact with the Lupus Foundation of America because I was doing my own individual fundraising streams for them. And they reached out and we, you know, they were like, you're one of the only people that fundraises for us on Twitch. And, you know, what can we do to support you? I'm like, this is cool. Like, this would be cool to have a partnership with the Lupus Foundation and be able to do some good. And so I came back to them and I pitched an event. I was like, why don't we do a weekend long charity event for Lupus Awareness Month, which is in May. And let me see if I can get some streamers to help me out. Let's get a little collaboration going. So I put out a call on Twitter and I said, hey, like, I'm looking for people who are passionate about fundraising that want to maybe raise some money for lupus research. And the response was overwhelming. Like, I had no idea this many people have been impacted by lupus. And because it's one of those things where lupus, I call it like an invisible disease, because I look fine. Like, people don't think I'm sick, but my body is very, very unwell. So it's not one of those causes that gets a lot of attention, a lot of traction, because it's like one of those quiet diseases. So, but it's pretty amazing how many people have lupus or have been impacted by the disease. Maybe they have a family member or a friend. So the very first year, we ended up doing our first event in 2020. And I told the Lupus Foundation of America that I'm going to get 10 streamers and we're going to raise $10,000. Well, we ended up having 35 streamers and raised over $50,000 that first year. And so I was like, okay, this is something. So I see 8-Bit D in the chat. 8-Bit D is one of the organizers as well. She jumped on that very, very first year. She is a lupus warrior as well. So between her, me, and L Bell, I think you know L Bell, the three of us organized this event. It is the largest collaborative fundraiser for lupus research and support programs on Twitch. This is our sixth year in May, and we are on the road to hit $1 million raised for the organization. So we are really excited for this year. It's a huge milestone. Like, I get so smiley and mushy about it because I just had no idea that it was going to get this big. But it's just a bunch of streamers that come together. It's like one big party. We just fundraise and hype each other up, and we have really cool events. And the Lupus Foundation of America is so supportive. They're so involved. Every year we do a goose duck game between the streamers and the LFA staff. So why not celebrate fundraising with a little bit of betrayal and murder? Right?
For those interested, when is it taking place? Within May? And then where can folks sign up to support?
Sure. So the event where most streamers fundraise is the first weekend in May, which is the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th of May. But we have events happening all month long. Most people will be fundraising those days, but like me, Dee, and Ellie will be doing an event to close out the month. So there will be stuff throughout the whole month. You don't have to fundraise that weekend. We invite everybody to join us. We would love to have you. You can sign up. You can go to the Lupus Foundation of America website. You can also, oh my gosh, I don't know. I'm scared to say this, but anything Game Monta and lupus related, you're welcome to DM me about it. My DMs are open for it. And I'm happy to give you any information you need. It's a real casual fundraiser, like fundraise for an hour, fundraise for 10 days, like whatever you want to do. We have everything super easy to set up. Like, we have all the toolkits, assets, videos, whatever you need, we got you.
And y'all, we are signed up for it as well, and so we're gonna help help Coco, 8-Bit, 3L, and the whole organization. We're gonna help push over that $1 million, and just that's huge that you started off organizing something like that and now it's at the point where it's about to hit a million this year. That is incredible.
It's pretty wild. Never thought it would be this big, but like at the same time, it makes sense because the Twitch community is so amazing and the people on this platform are so amazing. And we're so honored to have you this year. You have no idea. As soon as you said that, I immediately messaged Ellie and Dee, and I was like, oh my God, you would not believe who's going to join us this year.
No, I got our Tiltify link ready. Like, we are ready to go. We are ready to fundraise.
I'm so excited. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Yeah, anybody, and you know, we are so grateful for people who want to support, especially right now because federal funding is so up in the air with our current administration. And a lot of the funding that the LFA gets is from the government for research grants. So this year, it feels like we have a little bit more skin in the game and that what we're doing is even more important because we have some momentum with some of the research breakthroughs right now. Like, we don't want that to stop. I want to see a cure in my lifetime. So I'm pushing for these research funds, you know?
Can we go into a little bit, Coco, about some of the treatments that are out there and maybe why, like, kind of hearkening back to how it's very patient specific, that there's not this one all kind of cure, and what the treatments nowadays in fact do, and like what are the breakthroughs that are coming?
Sure. So the drug that I'm mostly going to talk about is something called Benlysta, but I'm going to talk about treatments pre-Benlysta. And I'm not a doctor or a medical professional. I'm just speaking on my experience in a very general sense. Some people might have a different experience. But from a lot of the lupus patients that I've spoken to, there's a drug called Plaquenil, which is an antimalarial, also known as hydroxychloroquine. You probably have heard it during the pandemic and how it was being flung as a cure for COVID. It is not. But that was that's a drug that a lot of lupus patients are on just constantly because it, for some reason, minimizes lupus flares. So that's something I've been on since for the last, like, I don't know, 15 or 20 years, like a long, long time. Steroids are also often used to treat lupus to help with inflammation. So prednisone is something that I go on and off of all the time. But that is long-term steroid usage is never good. So it's not like it's not a sustainable treatment for people with lupus. And then there are, you know, things to treat the symptoms. So based on if you have kidney involvement, lung involvement, you know, heart involvement, you obviously have to treat those symptoms as well. I believe it was in 2011. I might be off by a little bit, but 2011 was the first FDA approved medication for lupus itself, and that's called Benlysta. It is it can be administered in two ways. One is a subcutaneous injection at home once a week, but there is also a once a month IV infusion. So you can imagine, since it is not just a pill, how expensive.
That's actually something chat was wondering too about, just like how expensive is something like this and how important it is having healthcare for someone in this kind of circumstance.
So this drug is meant to basically suppress your immune system. And this is in some of the articles that I had sent you about the breakthroughs, is that the kind of the way to treat lupus is to do a very broad suppression of the immune system, which doesn't, I don't want to say it works. It helps, but it's not actually fixing the specific problem, because they don't really know what the specific problem is for lupus, which is what some of the breakthroughs have been lately. But for Benlysta, I can't take the injection at home. I'm actually allergic to it. My skin is. So I have to go in and get the infusion, and it's $10,000 for every infusion.
For one treatment?
For one treatment, once a month.
It's $10,000.
So yes. And in some cases, I've heard it's up to $13,000 in some cases. So I do have insurance. They cover about $6,000, $5,000 to $6,000 of that. And then I have to go and find help through copay programs to help pay for more of that. It's a lot to navigate. It's for one medication, it's a ton to deal with insurance, deal with copay programs, apply for them, submit explanation of benefits, try to get reimbursed. Like, it's a lot. And when you're already sick and stress is so bad for you, our healthcare system is really built to make it as difficult as possible to get the healthcare that you need. And they do that for a reason. You know, they make it difficult because they don't want to pay for stuff, and they hope people will give up and all of that. And it's a really tough thing when you are new to battling a chronic illness to have to do things like this. I've been doing it for 20 plus years, so I know how to navigate these things, but I can't imagine what it's like being a newly diagnosed lupus patient having to deal with all of this.
Yeah, I'd have no idea. I mean, even knowing how to navigate it, just having that month-to-month pressure on you of needing to get treatment, and then it's like, oh, I'm going to have a $4,000 bill to work with, and that dependence on phone calls and email or whatever to get the code. Like, that is an extremely difficult something to go day by day with. And that just, again, shows how strong of a warrior you are that you continue to go. Because, I mean, content creation alone is not easy, right? Content creation plus this, it seems like there's the stress of it. A lot of people could buckle. But what I hope people are getting from your story is y'all, there is an inspiration, someone to look up to here. Like, she is not just a warrior, I feel like, for lupus patients, but all of us. Like, you kind of embody, like, you're just an absolute badass, Coco. You're just like, you know what? I got this. Like, we can make it through this. And that is a spirit that is really, really incredible that you're able to embody through all this time.
I also want to put out there that the Lupus Foundation of America has been extremely supportive. And I think that there are a lot of nonprofits out there that are really great resources. So if you're battling a chronic illness outside of lupus, like, there's probably a nonprofit out there that has resources for you. Reach out to them, like, do your research on them, because they might be able to point you in the right direction if you're having trouble paying for your medication or having trouble finding treatment. Like, that, I can't tell you how, even if I don't need help with something, just knowing that the Lupus Foundation, like, I can just reach out to them and say, hey, I need help with this, and they'll have my back. So there are resources out there. It just, sometimes it takes some time to research it.
And a lot of grinding. And speaking of research, one thing that we were chatting about off stream is some of the work that's being done to help make treatments available. But it's like you were saying, it's very, very specific. So just some of the metrics behind it, right, is 9 out of 10 cases are women, right? There's also disproportionate affecting to certain communities, right, within that 9 out of 10. And then there is no root genetic cause that's been able to be identified. So, like, I've been going through paper after paper, and there are so many different varieties in terms of genetic mutations that it's affecting. So there's not just, like, this catch-all, cure-all that really is able to be identified, which also makes it, like, the work that you're doing with the Lupus Foundation, raising money, all the more important, because it's not like you have a target to hone in on.
Yeah, and even in the research, just recently, within the last about 6 months, they have found a specific protein. Oh my, see, I'm not a biologist, so I'm going to do my best to explain this. But basically, there is a specific protein that they found. There's an imbalance that is producing a certain T cell that damages healthy tissues. And so they have never been able to figure that out before. They just figured this out. And they're saying that this specific research might be kind of a segue into finding a treatment. But the problem is that not all lupus patients are the same. So that even if they do come up, they're like, this might be the root cause of lupus, we might be able to come up with a treatment or a cure, it's not going to apply to all lupus patients, only this specific portion of them. So that's what's really frustrating about the whole thing, is there's no blanket treatment, cure, there's no blanket ideal case. Like, they just, it is a really, really complicated disease.
The metrics are also super complicated, because there doesn't seem to be a consensus of how many patients have been diagnosed or might be living with lupus. Like, on the Lupus Foundation of America website, right, it's upwards in the 1.5 million that we're looking at. But then the official, like, CDC metrics are 200 to 300,000. And so it, even the diagnoses, it seems like, are very, very variable. So it's like it's hard to know what you're even fighting against.
Well, so many people are probably undiagnosed and also going untreated. An experience I had was that I was diagnosed with lupus. My insurance changed and I had to change rheumatologists. And my next rheumatologist undiagnosed me with lupus and said I don't have it and that I only have fibromyalgia. And so I was like, this doesn't feel right. So I'm going to go to another rheumatologist in the same practice as this. And I go to this other doctor and he's like, no, you definitely have lupus. So there's even, I think, a little bit of a misunderstanding across the medical field as well, you know, as far as understanding the disease and how it can manifest, because I am not a typical lupus patient in a lot of ways. One of the things that is kind of an indicator of an autoimmune disease is something called an ANA marker, which is done through blood work. And A lot of doctors will not diagnose with lupus unless you have a positive ANA marker in your blood. I never show it, ever, unless I am like hospital sick. So people look at my blood work and they're like, well, you're not showing autoimmune markers in your blood, so do you really have lupus? But I have in the past, I just don't show them all the time. So there's like this, there's no formula for the disease. And see, so it's
that part tough. Is even harder, right? Because even the diagnoses part, like it's one thing. It's like, yes, the genetics are very different. For example, right, in cancer, there are all kinds of differences. Even colon cancer, it's like there's 10 different subtypes depending on the mutation. But at least you can get the diagnosis. But here, it's like even the diagnosis is not something that can be standardized, which goes to speak of the complexity of lupus itself and why it's so important to fundraise. And what you're doing is so important as well, so we can get some answers, if we can get help for those in need. Seriously, Coco, everything that you do, it's big stuff. And I know it can get lost a lot, I feel, in the weeds, but just like pulling back on the curtain, like you do a lot for a lot of advocacy.
Yeah, I try to, you know, I living with this disease is really hard, and I am in a place of privilege. I have, I grew up and had the healthcare that I needed. And even with that, I'm still struggling. Like I still had a trouble getting diagnosed. I still have trouble having access to meds. Like I have access to Benlysta right now. Most people can't get it. It's too expensive or their insurance won't cover it. And so my whole thing is I want the people, the generation after me who have lupus should not have to suffer like I did. And so I am trying to leave this world saying I'm doing everything I can to make the next round of lupus warriors, set up for a better quality of life than I've had, and has had to suffer less than I have. And, you know, that goes for any group of people that I advocate for. Same thing for like women on the platform. When I started on Twitch, I didn't have anything. I had to struggle to get to where I am today. And I didn't have a mentor. I didn't have like really any women to look up to because all that was surrounding me were men. Like I just, and so now I'm thinking, well, I want the young girl who's watching Twitch that wants to be a streamer, I want her to have it easier starting out than what I had to go through. So that's kind of like my driving force in everything I do, is like I want the people that Ash Said Hi says this the best, and I love her for this. She says, we have to throw down the ladder after us, for the people that are down there trying to rise up. And I think that that's like a really great way to put it. Like, I want to throw the ladder down for the people that come after me.
That is a really beautiful way to put it. And it feels very much in the culture that you're cultivating, that it's not a competition, that there is enough room at the table for everyone. Right. And so it's just, it's really huge to find someone who's gone through the process of not being welcomed into certain spaces, whether it be a woman in gaming field, a woman in the sciences. But you've come through, and Coco, correct me if I'm wrong, you don't really seem bitter. You seem like you have a full-on force of wanting to be a driving force for good. Like, you might be bitter like about those jerks who did stuff, but like it's not really raining through, if that makes sense.
As I get older, I am having like the get off my lawn mentality a little bit more, but but no, I mean, I think our experiences shape who we are, and I've been through a lot, and you know, I'm pretty transparent about my experience with my disease. A couple years ago, I had a little bit of a cancer scare, probably because of lupus, and luckily I'm fine now. I'm good. I'm clear, and I'm monitoring my situation, but I had some really big complications with that situation and put me in the hospital and all these things. And I, you know, those types of things, I try not to let break me. You know, I feel them and I experience them and I have my moments with them, but I try to always keep that mentality of like, I am who I am today and I'm impacting the world. Even if it's in a small way, I'm impacting the world for the better. And these things that are happening to me are creating, are allowing me to do those things. And while some days are better than others, sometimes I have a better outlook than others, I do think that having to go through what I've been through has allowed me to hit $1 million for charity with GoTel. You know, if I didn't have those experiences, I probably wouldn't be here. So I try to stay in that positive mentality as much as I possibly can, because it is easy to be down and to feel sorry for yourself and all of that, especially when you're faced with such adversity all the time. It's very easy to get there. And it took me a long time to figure out how to manage it. In the beginning, it was very, very hard. I did not manage it well, but with time also comes healing. So
do you have any, I want to say, but almost tips and tricks for those in similar positions, maybe, you know, a couple of years back in their journeys of how to, like, reflecting back on what is a way that you would be like, you know what, if I learned, knowing now, this is how I would have dealt with X or Y or Z.
Are you talking from like a Twitch streamer standpoint or like battling chronic illness?
No, actually both.
Okay. So I think that, you know, when it comes to, you know, managing a chronic illness, a support system is really important. You need to find your people that are going to try to understand your situation and be a positive light in your life. And that's friends, family, that's, you know, I love my moderators on Twitch. They are so understanding of my situation. And like, I truly feel like they're a support system for me when it comes to my disease and what I go through. You know, I think that having people that go through the same thing that you do. So like me finding other lupus warriors on Twitch was a huge, shift in my ability to manage my disease, because I had people that understood what I was going through. So I do think like finding your people, your support system is really important. As far as like being a streamer on Twitch, I always tell, if I were to tell myself 7 years ago, it's to be comfortable with being uncomfortable and take those risks. And if you aren't putting yourself in situations that stretch your perspective, your mindset, your skills, that kind of push you outside of what you know, like you're not growing. So it's okay to take risks and fail, because there's no such thing as failure in content creation. Like, they're learning experiences. And if something doesn't work, that's fine. You say, okay, this didn't work. I'm going to change this and do something different. And we're going to see how that goes. And you move on. Like, there's no such thing as failure in content creation.
Do you think that mindset came from your background in science? Because that's a very, very healthy mindset to have in the sciences too.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that's kind of what you do, right? You say, okay, here's the theory of this experiment. This is what I want to do. Here's the plan, right? You execute that plan. And it either goes well or it doesn't. And then you analyze after the fact and you say, okay, this is what worked. This is what didn't work. How are we going to change it to make it even better next time? And that's what I tell a lot of people that I mentor too. It's, you know, that's kind of like what you do in business as well when you want to execute a business plan, right? I think it's a real fundamental idea that can be stretched across multiple industries on how you approach a problem. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. It's like you have almost all the different worlds kind of blended together in where you are now, where it's like the creative side of things with the content creation, you have the scientific side of things with like the base plan, and then you have to pull in the business side of things too. And it's like juggling all these at once is not a straightforward thing, but you, like you said, after so many years of experience, you just, I don't know, you make it look easy, Coco. I know it's not, but you make it look easy.
Thank you. Yeah, it's not. I've made many mistakes, too many to count in my time, in my life, of course, but also like on my time on Twitch. And I do also want to say, like, it's okay to feel emotions and to feel down or feel disappointed or feel like, you know, you sometimes you say like, oh, I failed at this. But and it's okay to feel those things. But what's most important is how you move forward and react to what has happened and how you can adjust your strategy or adjust your path to be able to learn from that situation and be better next time, because that's what being a human is, right? Like, we just try to be the best that we can be. I don't make New Year's resolutions ever because I never keep them. But what I do, I make a promise to myself the next year to say, I'm going to be better than what I was before, either a better person, do more for charity, or maybe it's develop a skill, or I'm just going to be a better Coco than I was the year before. So that's all you have to strive for. Other than that, we're humans. It's okay. It's not the end of the world.
I love that as advice. I feel like it's something that we kind of lose track of a lot of the times, where it's like you want to do something grandiose, but honestly, at the end of the day, if you can just be a better version of yourself from whatever time period to the next, that's really the biggest thing that we can strive for and go forward on that.
Yeah,
very, very beautifully put, Coco. As we round out, one question that we've been asking all of our guests as they've come onto stream is, and kind of the theme of the month is, you know, you had a background in chemistry, you're a content creator, you're a musician, a maker and crafter, a kitty cat person, you know, you just running the whole gambit. What does it mean to you to be a part of a woman in STEM? Like, what does that mean to you?
You know, it's funny. That's kind of a hard question, because like, it's just me. It's just who I am, you know? But it's important for me to understand that, like, I might be that person that a little girl says, like, I can do this, right? And so to be a woman in STEM, to be able to help pave the way for the people that come after me, even if I am not necessarily doing things in chemistry, you know, as a woman and as a biracial woman, to be able to be here and speak up about my experience, or being a women's guild leader, or to be a Twitch partner, or to speak on a stage somewhere, that means the world to me, because I did not get to see that when I was a little girl. And if I'm able to be that person for a little girl somewhere else, where it shows them that they can do this too, then I feel like everything that I've been through has been worth it. And so any woman or marginalized person who is out there and is playing against the odds, and you are alone, or you're the only person that's like you in your field, just know that you are probably the source of inspiration for someone else.
There is no topping that.
Thank you so much for having me. It's cool to kind of revisit my science life that feels so, so long ago. I appreciate what you do on this platform. I think science education is so important, probably now more than ever, with what's going on in our world. And I know that you're a Twitch ambassador, and so well deserved, because you're doing something on this platform that I think is needed and is so cool and is really thinking outside the box on what this platform is. And so I'm just really grateful to be here, and thank you for believing me.
Well, Coco, thank you so very much again for your time, your expertise, and just sharing your story with us tonight. And we can't wait to see you live tomorrow night again.
Yeah. Also, thank you for doing this. Like, the month-long programming highlighting women in STEM is incredible. And so, like, thank you for using your platform in bringing on such incredible people. Like, not many people would do that. And so, just, you deserve all your flowers for spending the time and energy and your bandwidth to do it. So thank you.
Thank you, Coco. Have a lovely evening, and we'll see you
Bye, everybody. Bye.
That was Coco Confession. You can find all links to their social media in the show notes. Thanks for listening. See you next time.